Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Before we begin, I want to welcome Seymour and Mindy Liebman. They're sitting there in the back, members of my former community in West Hempstead. And they are pillars of the community, and they're visiting here because a wedding in the family, and we're very happy that they were wise enough to decide to come this morning to the shir. All right, we need a little bit humor in our lives, because it hasn't been a humorous week at all. The shir, of course, is dedicated to the Fogel family, Hashem Yinkom Damo. What a tragedy of tragedy of the highest, I would say the lowest order. Beasts. How do you take little children? I don't know. Maybe we can understand previous periods in Jewish history far, far better as a result of this. But we don't need these kind of things. And it's of course going to fit into things we said last week and things we're going to say today. In a sense, top of the page it says HaKoreach HaMegillah LaMafreya Lo Yotza, and I have a two. Last week the topic of the shir was HaKoreach HaMegillah LaMafreya Lo Yotza. That was shir one, and we explained that halacha in its chassidic explanation given by the Baal Shem Tov. The halacha is HaKoreach HaMegillah LaMafreya, anybody who reads Megillah not in order. Chapter 4 before chapter 2. Chapter 9 before chapter 3. Pasuk 5 before Pasuk 4. You read it out of order, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. We said that the Baal Shem Tov gave another interpretation to this halacha. Whoever reads the Megillah and thinks that it's something that happened l'mafreya, long ago and far away, that this is something like once upon a time, and doesn't realize that the Megillah is current events. The Megillah, the relationship between the nations of the world and the Jewish people, is expressed in the Megillah. And just as then there was a Haman who wanted to destroy, lahashmid, laharog, l'arbe, to destroy and kill, Minar v'adzogein taf, babies, v'nashim. If you think that it was only then and not today, you're making a tragic mistake. The same thing is true today. So that the Megillah is not some kind of a, even as I saw years ago, people said, some silly story about a half-drunk king with a dunce cap on his head, and of course there's the great love story of the ravishing beauty Esther. Anybody who thinks that that's what the sum total of the Megillah is, don't get it. He doesn't get it. Unfortunately, the Megillah is the story of Jewish history until today, the Ides of March, the ninth day of Adar. So there is another ingredient in the deadly assault on the Jewish people. And I want to bring that assault, that in, and hopefully we'll be able to read a number of other pages from Wisbech. But first let's go step by step. There's so much to do over here, face. We need a few lifetimes to do all the things that we want to do. The Gemara Megillah, number one, the Megillah states further, Vayomelach HaMelech, Ma'alach Esther HaMalka, Umar Bakashateich, This pasuk appears twice in the Megillah. The first time that Esther comes to Ahasuerus, and that first time is of course the one after Mordechai had come to her and told her that there's a threat to destroy the entire Jewish people. There's a plan for the final solution. Go to the king. She says, wait. You and all of Israel fast for me day and night for 3 days and 3 nights, and I and my girls, we will also fast, and then I will come to the king. Because you must know that anybody who comes to the king not having been specifically invited can be struck down and killed instantly, levad, except for the one to whom the king is going to extend his golden scepter. And years ago, we talked about this, that from the moment that there was a threat on the life of Ahasuerus that was uncovered by Mordechai, Ahasuerus becomes a frightened individual. Which is, of course, the way all absolute dictatorial, tyrannical rulers should feel, and they most probably all do. They're all scared stiff. The fear that we must be going through many capitals in the Muslim world. Freidnish is Titzachup. They deserve everything. Okay, he's a frightened man. Nobody can get into his throne room without being specifically invited. He needs a man who's going to be out there and run the realm for him, and that man is Haman. Why does he choose Haman? Because he knows that Haman is a ruthless killer. He's a Gaddafi. He's not going to go off someplace to Sharm el-Sheikh or who knows where, like Mubarak. Gaddafi is made of tougher stuff than that. He'll slaughter his own people. She comes that morning, she stands before the throne room, and at that moment she can be struck down. The king sees her, he extends the golden scepter. She comes in, and he says to her, he's most probably very, very curious. He knows that she just took her life in her hands, literally. She could be lying there dead right now. So he said, Vayomalah HaMelech, the king said to her, Malach Esther HaMalka, Malach, what's wrong? And what is it that you want? Ad Chatzi HaMalchus, until half of the kingdom. And it's yours, until half of the kingdom. The Gemara makes a very fascinating comment over here. And by the way, it applies to the next time when she comes to ask, later on she has another request, he says the same thing, Ad Chatzi HaMalchus, up until half of the kingdom shall be given to you. The Gemara says, Chatzi HaMalchus, Ahasuerus offered Esther half the kingdom, V'lo Kol HaMalchus, and not the entire kingdom, V'lo Dovar Shechotzeitz L'Malchut, and not something that would divide, chatzi, not that which would cut his kingdom in half. Umay nihu, and what is that that can bring his kingdom down? Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to take you on a little bit of a journey, and then of course you will decide for yourself if the Megillah is something that took place long ago and far away, or the Megillah is very, very timely. The basic thrust of what's happened is the following. Koresh, king of Persia, the Babylonian Empire fell to the Persians and the Medes. In other words, the family of Nebuchadnezzar, Avilmerodach, Belshazzar, the dynasty that destroyed the Beit HaMikdash and exiled the Jewish people, crumbled before the forces of Persia. And Koresh, Cyrus, king of Persia, is now another king. Koresh gave permission to the Jewish people to go back to Eretz Yisrael and build the Beit HaMikdash. The great proclamation of Koresh, and that's really the last pasuk in Tanakh. The last pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is, Vahashem Imo V'yal, King Koresh says, Let anyone who wants to return go, and God will be with him, and he will go up to the land. But then things got very difficult. Jews came back, 42,000 Jews, 8,000 head of cattle and horses and camels. They came back, they began the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, and then, what? Construction in Yerushalayim? Construction? And forces were brought to bear, pressure was brought to bear on this world conqueror Koresh, that he banned any construction. The one who gave permission for the construction of the Beis HaMikdash recanted, he rescinded. No construction, no construction, nowhere. Does that sound familiar? Or is this a story of 2,500 years ago? No construction. And this is what's going on in Ahasuerus' head when Esther comes in to see him. You can ask anything you want. Don't ask me to permit the construction of apartments in Malay Adumim. You ask anything you want. Not that. And we're not going to permit closing in of any new pasuk in Eli or Shiloh. That will divide my kingdom, tear it apart. My kingdom will be torn apart, yes.
Does that mean that Ahasuerus suspected that Esther was Jewish?
No, he didn't suspect at all.
He did not know
that she was Jewish, no.
Why would she be?
Because this was a, you'll see, this was a political hot potato because there were forces in the world that didn't want any construction going on there. You know what we're going to do now? We're going to read a pasuk, a chapter in Ezra. Just fasten your safety belts, and we're going to go through this chapter in Ezra. And you're going to see what was going on in the world. There were, when Sanherib, king of Ashur, had exiled the 10 tribes, he brought people from different places of in the world and settled them in Yehuda v'Shomron. These people whom we know clearly were not Israelis. They weren't even Palestinians. They were brought in from elsewhere in the world, precisely the way our present-day Palestinians came in. Anybody who ever read that great book, and if you never read it, you better read it, Joan Peters, From Time Immemorial. She says the Palestinians claim that they've been here, you understand, from the time of Adam HaRishon, and Jews came who knows how many thousands of years after. So she proves that nearly all of the so-called Palestinians who live here are migrants who came after the Jews came back, and here there were jobs. They came here for jobs. They migrated in from Syria, from Lebanon, from Egypt, just like we have them coming in now, here from Eritrea, from Darfur, from Schwarze Africa, they're coming in here. They were not indigenous. They were not the indigenous people, the native people of this country that were here from the days of David and Shlomo. It's nonsense. So now watch, these people who had been brought in by some Sanherib, and really, for all intents and purposes, were relative newcomers to the land, they have an agenda of their own. They despise the Jews. So let's go. I'm going to try and do this quickly, so you better hold cup with me. And if you're not holding cup, not in the Hebrew, because this is where it's going to switch to Aramaic. There are major parts of Ezra and Nehemiah that are Aramaic. I don't know, I may just switch to English. But anyway, the enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the people of the exile were building a sanctuary, and said, Jews are building the Beis HaMikdash. There were two approaches. It's fascinating. These two approaches are great. They came to Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was one of those who returned from the exile. He was from the family of Beis David, from the family of the Davidic dynasty, and to the heads of the congregation, and they said to them, Nivne imachem, let us build together with you. You, us, all of us, together, biyachad, we're going to build the Beit HaMikdash. Ki kochem nidrosh el Elokechem, we too seek your God. These nations that had been brought in transfer of populations by Sanherib, Perikin Malachim says that they continue to serve their idols and they also serve the God of Israel. These people were seriously and deeply confused. But one thing is for sure, they did not love Jews. So now, this is the classic approach. Let's build together. Reuven, Shimon, Muhammad, Mustafa, Christopher, hey, all of us together. All one big happy family. And V'lo anachnu zavchim, to him, to this God of yours, we bring sacrifices. Mimei Asar Chadon Melech Ashur, from the days of Asar Chadon, the king of Ashur, he was a son of Sancherev Melech Ashur, the one who exiled the 10 tribes. Melech Ashur, Hamalo Tanupo, he's the one who brought us here. Vayam Lehem Zerubbabel V'Yeshua, this is beautiful. Zerubbabel and Yeshua, that was Yahushua Kohen Gadol. Ushar Roshei Havot V'Yisrael, the other heads of the families of Israel. Lo Lachem V'Lonu Livnot Bayit L'Elokein. This is not an undertaking for you and us to build a house for our God. Ki Anachnu Yachad, we alone, Nivnel Hashem L'Kei Yisrael, we will build our Beit HaMikdash to God of Israel. Kasher Tzivan HaMelech Koresh Melech Boros, as Koresh King of Persia had commanded. There are two approaches that nations of the world take in order to weaken the Jewish people. One is, let's be friends. You, us, all of us. One for all and all for one. Brotherhood and goodwill on earth to all men. And of course the purpose of this is to water down Judaism, weaken Judaism. But they were strong and they said, no, we are not building with you. So what was the next step? This overture of friendship had been rejected, so now they become the enemies of the Jewish people. We talked about this at length in that pasuk when Yaakov is being confronted by Esav coming toward him. So Yaakov prays, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav, save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. So the great Beis Halevi says he prayed for two things. He prayed, save me from Esav if he comes as achi, my brother, and save me from Esav if he comes as Esav. And what is Yaakov more frightened of? If he's going to come as his brother and his friend. That terrifies him more than anything else. Something is happening.
Rabbi, it's
cherish your Jewish roots. Pastor Kenneth Rawson urges you to share. The Christian religion was never meant to be a world religion. Judaism was. Okay, we may have to give a whole show on this. I'm sorry, Sarah. Well, you're here 63 years, but I don't have 63 years to finish this chapter in Tanakh. Yeah, so we'll have to wait. Now, Vayihi Amoritz Merapim Yedei Am Yehuda, the people living in the land, they weaken the hands of Yehuda and frighten them. Don't you continue construction. And they frighten them from building. The Sochem Aleim Yoatzim, they hired advisors who would tell them, how we can get to these Jews, in order to cause them to give up their construction project. It happened, Kolimei Koresh Melech Paras, Va'ad Mamlechas Dor Yavash Melech Paras, Now, Koresh is the beginning. Dariavish. Dariavish is going to come after Achashverosh. Dariavish is going to be the son of Achashverosh and Esther. 18 years, there will be no construction. No construction. Because the enemies inside Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael are a strong lobby against construction. And then, of course, you know, God has his, you know, he waits and he gets his nekamala. The Achashverosh who says no construction. Even Tesser, he says, you can have until half the kingdom, but don't you ask me for something that will just split my kingdom apart. There's too much opposition to construction. So the Rebbeinu has his nekama along after the death of Achashverosh. Achashverosh's son is the one who lifts the ban on construction. Bet HaMikdash is completed. The walls around Yerushalayim are built. Jews start building all over Yehuda v'Shomron. So, you know, he who laughs last, laughs best. Okay? So it was from that entire period, from the days of Koresh until Dariavash, and in the days, in the kingdom of Achashverosh, at the beginning of his kingdom, Kosvu Sitna al Yoshvei Yehudam Yerushalayim. The anti-Semites in Eretz Yisrael, they wrote letters of hatred about the inhabitants of Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Ubimeratach Shasta. Here, in the days of Artaxerxes, Mitadra Tavel with the rest of his cohorts wrote a greeting. This is really Koresh. Professional name for Koresh. The text of the letter was written in Aramaic script, in the Aramaic language. And you know what? The sum total of what they said is the following. Take a look at the Pasuk 11. This is the text of the letter that they dispatched to him, to King Koresh. From your servants, the people of the Trans-Euphrates region, on this date, let it be known to the king. Listen what they're writing to the king. Let it be known to the king that the Jews who went up from you to us have arrived in Jerusalem. These are the people who are at present living in Eretz Yisrael. They're writing to Koresh, the great king of Persia. Those people you sent up have now, who went up from you to us, have arrived in Jerusalem. So first of all, you have to understand that already they're leaving the impression that these people are not really, they don't really belong here. You send people, they're here now with us. We are the ones who are we're the natives, and these are the Nayigi Kimina, the refugees. They are constructing a rebellious and villainous city. This is their description of Yerushalayim. They are constructing a rebellious and villainous city. They have laid the foundations for the ramparts and are linking the walls. They're already beginning to put sections of the wall together and complete it. Now let it be known to the king that should this city be built and the ramparts established, they will no longer pay levy, tax, and duty, and you will thus cause damage to the royal revenue. Now, as much as we are desirous of destroying the sanctuary, for it is not proper for us to witness the king's disgrace. This city, Yerushalayim, has a history of being a rebellious city. You're going to destroy your kingdom in the event that you permit this city to be rebuilt. As long as the city had been built before it was destroyed, it sowed hatred and warfare throughout the world. This city can't be built. Does this sound something like the protocols of the elders of Zion? There is some kind of a world conspiracy that comes from Jerusalem that can swallow up your whole global kingdom. What were we talking about last week? I was saying they believed this. They believed it and they were frightened of it. They saw the Jews as some kind of an esoteric, hidden, satanic power, and therefore Jerusalem is a satanic city. And if you're going to let them build Jerusalem, this kingdom is finished. Ahasuerus believes it, and he therefore, like all good goyim, believed it, and therefore he says to Esther twice, "Ad chatzi hamalchus." Don't ask me for anything that will split my kingdom in half and destroy my kingdom. No, you can't have that. No construction, no building, no Yerushalayim, no walls of the city, no place. Finished. Yet. Over. Okay, so at least we know that we are now, the story of the Megillah takes place during the kingdom of Ahasuerus. And during this kingdom of Ahasuerus, no construction is going on any place in Eretz Yisrael. Which of course makes it a little difficult to understand that Jews are able to go to the party of this fellow Ahasuerus. And according to the Gemara, that big bash of 180 days that he had in Shushan was in order to celebrate the fact that according to his calculation, 70 years had passed from the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and they had heard prophecies that after 70 years Jews are going to go back and start rebuilding, and nothing's happening. Uh-huh. Nothing is happening. So he wants to celebrate the fact that according to his calculation there is no longer any hope for the Jewish people. And Jews go to the party. Jews go to the party. And it was probably that's why the students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai said that the near punishment of the near destruction of the people was Al Shenanu, because they enjoyed the Suda of Ahasuerus. Can you understand? And then these Jews didn't realize that he is celebrating what he sees as the end of the Jewish people. No construction in Yerushalayim. And they're going to go over there, you understand? They're going to be invited to the White House and afraid to say what should be said. That's the historic context of the Megillah. No construction in Yerushalayim. No construction any place in Eretz Yisrael. And they see this as, we're going to finish off the Jewish people. That great threat. We don't have to read anymore. Ahasuerus's fear is precisely the same fear that we talked about last week. When Haman comes home, after taking Mordechai through the streets of Shushan, he comes home in grief and in embarrassment, and they tell him, "Imi zera Yehudim, Mordechai Acher Hachilota Limpolufanav." If this Mordechai is from Jewish seed who you've begun to fall, you're going to fall. Nafol Tipolufanav, you will fall before him, because they really believe it. They really believe it, and we just want to intensify this idea, the extent to which, in a pathological way, there are so many people on the face of this earth who see us as satanic. We are the source of all evil. We sometimes can feel a little bit, we don't take it so seriously. Or if we don't take it seriously, it's at our own grave risk. And if we needed to see the extent to which they hate us, all we had to see were the pictures of those children and their parents. I haven't seen what they've been showing on, what they showed for a while on YouTube, that the government permitted the grisliest pictures of all to be aired. So let's go one again to our good friend Robert Wistrich. These are different pages than you had last week. It's a mess. But you know what? Thanks, it wasn't put together correctly. No, but all you have to do is, I wrote numbers on the pages. Find 1 and 2. 1 and 2. And we're going to make sure that the Megillah, therefore, is not going to be a story of yesteryear. It's going to be a story of today. There's only one big difference between the story of the Megillah and Jewish history today. What's that one big difference? We have a state, and we have an army, and the Rebbein Shem seems to be on our side. Another point I want to make. The name of God does not appear in the Megillah. No. It's Megillat Esther. God is concealed. He's Behester in the Megillah. Our job when reading the Megillah is Legalot Megillah Esther, to reveal that which is concealed. The mitzvah of reading the Megillah is because of Pirsume Nisa, making the mess. No. Now, anybody who reads the Megillah carefully, and I think that's also what Chazal meant when they said that wherever it says Hamelech in the Megillah, yeah, it means not only this king of flesh and blood, Achashverosh, Hamelech also means Hamelech, Melech Malkei Hamelechim. Because he's there. You don't see him clearly. You just have to be aware. You have to know that he's doing a job. You don't see it clearly. I think it's our responsibility nowadays to just, you read the newspaper, doesn't say too much about God. You can find him in the newspaper every day. How do you like that? That's why I hold that it's a mitzvah to read the newspaper before I go to davening. I can't go to davening without having gone over the headlines in the Jerusalem Post. Otherwise, my davening can davenish. It's no davening. Not worth a thing. What? We don't really know what's going on. What about this Stuxnet bug? Stuxnet. This virus shall our computer shed nidbak that has affected the Iranian nuclear program. What do you think this is? What do you think this is? This is just plain Israeli brains? Or there's a rebellion who says, have to take it easy. You have somebody who wants to destroy it. We're going to take care of them little by little. First, we have this computer bug. It took months till we found out about it. Nobody is saying how much damage it's done. I mean, there are all sorts of things that you pick up little hints, like they've had to start taking rods out of the nuclear reactor. I don't know what it means, but I can just say over what it says in the paper. Okay, Stuxnet is a problem. And what, you think the whole upheaval, the unprecedented upheaval in the Muslim world is not for our benefit? For sure it's for our benefit. And if we don't see it right now, we will see it. They're so busy with themselves, they don't have enough time. The only one who can worry about us is Hillary Clinton, you understand. She's insulted again because Netanyahu said that there are going to be 400 apartments built. Jeez, you know. Okay. I'm not safer. She always was, and she still is. I don't know. There was a shtickel item 2 weeks ago about some anti-tank missile. Yeah, yeah. That Israel developed something that if something was coming toward a tank, nobody has to do anything. the tank just, because I shoot off, and it happened 2 weeks ago, and it just smashed the target like that. Get all the... Yeah, what is it? Okay, you can trust Malka to come up with a possible Yishaya. Kol kli yutzar olayich lo yitzvach v'chol mishpat alecha tarshi. I just succeeded in killing the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Okay. But basically, Yeshayahu was saying, you know, all these things that they prepare against you will not succeed. Of course, the tragedy is that there were periods of time in which they did succeed, and they succeeded. But did they succeed? But it's obvious to me, and this we talk about 20 years ago, that we are in a completely different period now. It's a period in which God is pouring out His goodness, His beneficence, and His kindness to the Jewish people. He's watching over us. He's watching over us. But you have to keep reading the paper and see what's going on here, what's going on there. There's enough confusion going on in the Palestinian world. Okay, Wistrich. 20 minutes for Wistrich. Okay. One of the significant points that he makes in his book is that Muslim anti-Semitism is a direct growth from fascist Hitler anti-Semitism. It's not a different breed nor a different kind. It's Hitler that you're seeing before you. These fellas with the suits, with the ties, this is Hitler philosophy. Here. Hitler, Yimach Shemai, he didn't write Yimach Shemai. I had to read what was on the page before. Hitler, Yimach Shemai, underlined the ideological dimension of World War II in the West in unequivocal terms. Germany was at the present time engaged in a life and death struggle with two citadels of Jewish power. You hear? Elohim Divrei Hitler Yimach Shemai. Germany was at the present time engaged in a life and death struggle with two citadels of Jewish power, Great Britain and Soviet Russia. He believed that Great Britain and Soviet Russia were the vassal states that were being manipulated by the Jews and used by them. He admitted that theoretically there was a difference between England's capitalism and Soviet Russia's communism. England and Russia are opposing forces, true, but in practice, the Jews in both countries were pursuing a common goal. For the Nazi leader, the hour of reckoning with the Jews was indeed fast approaching. This was the decisive struggle on the political level that presented itself in the main as a conflict between Germany and England, but ideologically it was a battle between National Socialism and the Jews. Weltanschauung, ein Kampf zwischen dem Nationalsozialismus und dem Judentum. That's what it was. It was self-evident Hitler maintained that Germany would furnish positive and practical aid to the Arabs. Involved in the same struggle because this was a war of survival. They see the threat from the Jews as a war of their own survival. It's self-defense, if you wish, in which the Jews were able to mobilize all of England's power for their ends. Narushkan. But this is exactly what they believe. Hitler assured Haj Amin. Haj Amin al-Husseini was the Yimach Shemai Mufti of Jerusalem, who was one of the leaders of world anti-Semitism in the late 20s of the previous century, through all of the 30s until the end of the Second World War. He spent a few years living in Germany during the Second World War. Hitler assured Haj Amin that his fanatical struggle against the Jews lay at the very core of the military offensive the Third Reich was waging against the British Empire and Soviet Russia. You understand? He went to war. He went to war against the Jews. That was his whole this exterminatory war against the Jews would be carried on beyond the European continent once the German armies had reached the southern exit of Caucasia. See what's underlined? In other words, the Germans were committing to the task of wiping out the Jewish national home in Eretz Yisrael and destroying the predominantly Sephardic Jewish communities in Arab lands. They wanted to destroy them too. And here comes, of course, one of those great Hashgacha Pratis moments in history. The ideological foundations of the Nazi Arab axis on the Jewish question could hardly have been stated more clearly. But after Stalingrad and the victory of the British Army at El Alamein in 1942, we once spoke about that a few years ago here. We spoke about that battle in late October, early November of 1942, the Battle of El Alamein. And you know, I've been watching, you see on the maps these cities in Libya. There's war going on in Libya, as then Gaddafi checked those in. So one of the places on the maps and one of the places where part of the battle are taking place is Tobruk. Tobruk was the port where the British and the Canadians and others brought in all their supplies in order to be ready for the great battle against Rommel. The battle was the Battle of El Alamein. And the Battle of El Alamein was the most crucial of all battles, because what was hanging in the balance were the 400,000 Jews who lived in Eretz Yisrael. 400,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael was part of the British mandate. The British had already notified the leaders of the Jewish community that in the event that Rommel breaks through at El Alamein, which means the next to fall is going to be Alexandria and Egypt, and then Rommel and Hitler are in Eretz Yisrael, they notified the leaders of the Jewish community that the British army has orders to fall back into Mesopotamia. They were going to leave 400,000 Jews, and they knew already what Hitler was doing. They were just going to leave them there to be slaughtered by Hitler. Hitler's plan, you can't even understand now. I'm beginning to see things a little more clearly. Why did he invade Russia? Everybody was expecting him to cross the channel and invade England. And they thought it was the worst mistake that Hitler made, Operation Barbarossa, where he invades Russia. Russia, with whom he had a pact. They were going to work together. Because he wants to destroy Eretz Yisrael. That's what he wanted to do. He comes through Russia, and he comes straight across down to Iran, Lebanon, Iraq, and he comes against Eretz Yisrael from the Galil. Rommel is coming to Eretz Yisrael through the Sinai, between Hitler's European forces and his African forces, the Africa Corps. He will crush Eretz Yisrael in the middle. That his two first big defeats come at Stalingrad and at El Alamein. I was in fun of quoting Churchill. Before El Alamein, we never had a victory, and after El Alamein, we never had a defeat. Interesting that just as he's on his way to Eretz Yisrael, that's where everything begins to change. I had somebody sitting someplace around there, I forgot his name, I'll remember, who was a doctor, a surgeon in the U.S. Army, says that they taught them what they learned in history, that the night before the big battle at El Alamein, the German army in the desert developed a serious case of shigellosis. You think I know what shigellosis is? I'll tell you. I learned then what shigellosis is. Extreme diarrhea. There were a few hundred thousand German soldiers the night before the big battle that's going to decide the fate of Eretz Yisrael. they get shigellosis. I couldn't have made up that word myself. I learned it right here in this room.
What it does mean? What it does mean?
Shilshul. Aval shilshul b'tzura charifa ma'ot. By the way, in addition to the fact, of course, that the commander of the forces had died the day before in his tent near El Alamein, German forces, and Rommel was back in Germany in a hospital. They hustled him out of hospital. Hitler said, get back there. So, you understand, you have a Rommel who's sick, and you have an army that's sick. So, and of course, Montgomery thinks that he defeated the German army. Hey, face of course. The Rebellion defeated the Hashem is Mosar. You understand? But now, I just understand now why he had to invade Russia. Everybody thought it was a terrible mistake that Russia was going to... You know why? Because he's living with this idea that the worst threat to the world is the Jewish people. And he has to wipe them out, not only in Europe, but that group in Eretz Yisrael. He promised Haj Amin al-Husseini he's going to destroy them too. And in the process, he destroys himself, but not soon enough. Yeah. The ideological foundations of the Nazi Arab axis on the Jewish question could hardly have been stated more clearly, but after Stalingrad and the victory of the God's Eighth Army at El Alamein in late 1942, the Mufti's practical prospects of leading the broad Islamic Arab national movement to liberate Palestine began to fade. Let's go on to page 2. What do I have underlined here? During the last 2 years of the war, the Mufti's intransigent resolve to prevent European Jews from escaping the gas chambers led to close collaboration with the SS and its head, Heinrich Himmler. Islamic fascism, Sinasius style, was nurtured by Hitler. The leader of the Palestinian Arabs was clearly driven by the premise that the shortest road to a post-war Arab Palestine ran over the corpses of European Jewry. They're later going to accuse us that we built Eretz Yisrael on the corpses of European Jewry. That ugly accusation, you understand? By the way, now they couldn't even say that because now they say it never even happened. They want no Jewish corpses altogether. Let's go the next paragraph. On November 2nd, 1943, the 26th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, the Mufti was equally explicit, declaring that there could be no toleration of Jews. It was the duty of all Muslims, and especially of the Arabs, to expel these infidels from their lands. According to the Palestinian national leader, this had been the teaching of the Prophet 1,300 years earlier. This is part of Islamic belief. The Jews were the bloodsuckers of the nations and corruptors of morality, incapable of loyalty or genuine assimilation. Their boundless egoism and perverse belief that they were the chosen people, they hated that very, this chosen people that got them going, had led them to expropriate the indigenous inhabitants wherever they settled. We always threw people out. Wherever we were, we threw people out. Let's go to page 3, let's see. No. Go on to page 4. Let's see that I'm not so crazy. Second paragraph. After endless pressures and much bargaining, the final document of Durban 2, you remember Durban 2? Did not refer to Israel or the Middle East, except for one general clause about foreign occupation. It even added, at the last minute, a paragraph stating that the Holocaust should never be forgotten. They threw that in, even though nobody believed it. But this hardly compensated for the fact that the United Nations had once again given center stage to Iran's anti-Semitic language against Israel. applauded by the many delegates who remained in the hall. One of the main speakers at Durban 2 was Ahmadinejad. The fact that such a 21st century Purim Spiel should take place at a UN anti-racism conference strikingly illustrates many of the themes we have explored in depth in this book. Holocaust inversion, anti-Zionist and anti-Semitism, conspiracy theory, anti-racism, the legacy of third worldism, anti-Westernism, and self-destructive Islamic ideologies, all of these make up the mindset of the world of Islam. On April 20th, 2009, this cocktail of lethal hatreds came together under the relentlessly abused banner of human rights in order to defame the one state that had risen in 1948 to grant refuge to Holocaust survivors and prevent another terrifying massacre of Jews. They attacked this, and I've said many, many times, God did not bring about nationalism and the whole upheaval in the world at the second part of the 19th century and throughout the 20th century in order to bring into being all of these Tashluganic countries that have been killing each other ever since. It was also that at a moment of grace, the redemption should bring the State of Israel into being. However, none of this deterred the President of Switzerland from meeting with Ahmadinejad in order to pursue Swiss business interests, as if there were no unresolved nuclear weapons issues, no sanctions against Iran, no threat to annihilate Israel. It's business as usual. As if the growth of anti-Semitism in Switzerland and the dismal record of complicity with Nazi Germany during World War II had not taught the Swiss that there can be no neutrality in the face of evil. That's a very, very good word. There can be no neutrality in the face of evil. What did Edmund Burke say? Then? The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. I'll say it again. Great word. Edmund Burke, an Irish something or other, philosopher. The only thing necessary for the victory, the triumph, the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
To stand by.
Yes?
To stand by.
And nachon, to stand by. Lo lasot klum. This appears, however, to be a most difficult. Let's go. I don't even know what direction I'm going. Lesson, page 5. For many European countries to learn, trapped as they are in their own cynical double talk, political correctness, and multicultural illusions in the face of creeping domestic Islamization. Now, they can't even see, European countries can't even see the grave danger that they face from within. Oh, there's so much. I don't know. Okay. One more paragraph. In many Western countries today, the new Judenhass, hatred of Jews, anti-Semitism, as well as the studied indifference to it, is closely linked to an unprecedented demographic shift and its growing political significance. In Europe, cities such as Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Antwerp, Brussels, Malmo, and any other towns from the British Midlands to the Côte d'Azur may soon have Muslim majorities. As I read it right now, you know what? I think that Rabbeinu Shlomo is beginning to punish them for having watched the Holocaust and did nothing or help. Yes?
I said long time ago that Europe didn't want the Jews, so they got the Muslims.
Uh-huh. Europe didn't want the Jews, so they got the Muslims. Remember? Quote, Queenie. But it's unbelievable. I just, as I'm reading it now, I think to myself, you know, that the Rabbeinu Shalom is bringing the Irish. France and all of these countries, they did nothing. Britain is already nearly held hostage by Islam, yes?
But the Muslims come with oil.
When I was talking about these little miracles where we don't notice that God is around, I suggest that you should have read two articles about the oil reserves off the coast of Eretz Yisrael and shale oil, and there are 20 billion zillion barrels there, and before you know it, well, you know what's going to happen? The biggest oil exporter in the world is going to be Israel. And then they'll be right when they say the Jews have all the economic power in the world. So what about the... What I remember they always used to say, you know, the nation, he took Tarisol out of Egypt and he made a mistake. He should have turned it third right and taken us to Saudi Arabia. And God must have been laughing and saying, I did take them to a place of oil. Who knows? We'll see what's going to be. Chris, you've got 10 seconds.
A lot of people are under the misconception that the French opposed the Germans. In France, which had 60 million Frenchmen, there were only 3,000 Frenchmen in the French resistance. Only 3,000.
Modern anti-Semitism most probably started in France. The fellow who coined the word anti-Semitism was a Frenchman. I think it was Drummond, right around the time of the
Dreyfus.
A bunch of anti-Semitism. All right, we're going to finish this. Dr. Goldblum is here, you understand? He most probably knows more than I do about all of this. I read one book, he must have read a thousand.
Can I just say, that I personally met Viscount Montgomery by Alamein, because I was at the...
Who did you meet?
Montgomery.
Montgomery?
You mentioned him.
Yes?
I think it's relevant. And I was at the school, his school, where he was.
Yes?
And he gave a lecture, and I can confirm what you say. He said, this is what we did. I did this, the Germans went there, but I did that. And he had a board, big board, and he showed us what he did. So you're confirming what you say, that they think they were the...
In other words, my attack on Montgomery was justified.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Anytime you want to say something that confirms what I said, you can get out of it. Just one more sentence. While traditional Christianity appears to be dying on its feet in most of Europe, Islam has become far more militant. Christian European populations continue to age, but Muslim population growth is surging forward. Ah, I can keep going, keep going. That's it. Number one, wait a minute. Chag Purim Sameach, everybody. We should be zeichet to see the Mehel of the Yameinu, and even before Purim, that the Revelation continued to bring down the Sony soil of the world. And never, there should no longer be the evil of the Levayas. I was at the Levayas Sunday. I haven't seen so many people at the Levayas, I think, since Shlomo Zalman's Levayas. Shlomo Zalman had close to 500,000 here. There were tens of thousands of people on all the hills around Harambukon. It was heartbreaking. But anyway, we should nip this all up. Mark the simple like you couldn't do it, the simple, the sauce of your car. Came to your lungs. Okay.